While Fryer can speculate about the future, this man, Cannon, does speak authoritatively about the distant past, including the formation of the universe, if that's not long enough ago, and what's happening in the night sky right now. Perry Vahos is a member of the same exclusive club that Richard Brecken belongs to. I know some of you know Richard. He's a philatelist, and I guess there's nothing special about that around here, except that as the Australia Post philatelic group historian, he gets paid to do what he'd be doing in his spare time. This is a really good way to arrange your life. And Perry Vahos seems to have arranged his life in the same way, that basically his two loves in life are astronomy and music, and he actually derives his income from both of those areas of work. He's currently the past president and one of the vice presidents of the Astronomical Society of Victoria. He regularly comments about space matters in the press, on TV and radio, and indeed I woke up to his dulcet tones yesterday when he was explaining the Australia Post meteorite shower on the 6 o'clock news. You can hear Perry on Tuesday nights on 774 with Derek Gill, where he answers everybody's questions about space, and he's pretty good. He gets questions like this. We're driving on the Murray Valley Highway near Tolangata. We can see red lights in the sky. What is it? Perry calmly asks which direction they're travelling in. He then consults his detailed mental map of the sky and answers their question. His special gift is his ability to explain very complex concepts in such a way that ordinary people can understand them, even me. And he's got quite a following. One evening I'd gone to bed early after a hard day at Australia Post, only to be rung up by a neighbour imploring me to go outside and look up. He was listening to Perry on the ABC, and this was the opportunity to see Mars at its closest for 250 years. So I got up and took a look. It did look a little bit brighter. Would you please welcome Perry Vahos to officially open the Blast Off exhibition.
Good evening, everyone. Nice to see you all here. And I hope you get as much pleasure out of the exhibition when you later have a look at it as what I did earlier. So to Richard, wherever he is, congratulations on a wonderful exhibition. And I'm sure many people will come through the halls to have a look at it. And I'd like to thank Bruce and Australia Post for inviting me here this evening, representing the Astronomical Society of Victoria, to open the exhibition. I think sometimes we forget how much the space age is part of our lives. Some of you this evening perhaps were driving in your cars and listening to the news with a report that came from some other part of the world that was beamed to us expressly by satellites. Or perhaps last night, thinking you might have to walk here, you watched the evening news and watched the weather report with those wonderful pictures of the Earth so that you could decide whether to bring a brolly or not. Again, a satellite from space helped you to do that. Some of you may have even been in the enviable position of having GPS navigation in your cars, and you could have got here certainly much earlier than I did, because I was using way old technology. I think it's called the Melways. So I would have been here earlier had I been able to use some GPS to find my way. So there's lots of technology that's become widely available now because of this one single step that we dared to take on this night 50 years ago. Now, this was no special creation, certainly not in terms of what technology was existing then. Well, what I meant to say was it was a special creation, but it wasn't anything too out of the ordinary. It was a ball about the size of a beach ball, about 60 centimetres in diameter. It weighed about 10 kilos more than I do, 83 k's. I'm working on getting the other ones down. And it was covered on its outside surface by a very, very highly polished aluminium. And the reason for that was so that it could reflect the sun's light and it could easily be seen by everybody on the earth looking up within a couple of hours or so after sunset in order to be able to see this wonderful new star that was passing through many, many constellations, but in fact didn't belong to any of them. It had its origins in a much, much smaller and contained place. It had a lot of meaning to people back in 1957, and I'm sure some of you here are old enough to be able to remember that. Show of hands, please, who saw Sputnik 1957? Quite a few. My father tells me that he held me in his arms and pointed up to it, and that was my first astronomical connection. I'll take his word for it, but it affected different people differently. If you happen to be an internationally recognised entertainer, crossing Sydney Harbour in early October 1957, and all of a sudden you spotted this moving object through the sky, well, it had a different meaning to you than it may have had to somebody else. The meaning that it had for Richard Pennyman was it was a message from God. God was speaking to him, and it was saying, or God was saying, "You, little Richard, have been playing the devil's music for way too long. Give it up and take on the one true path that leads to me." This is a true story, ladies and gentlemen. Little Richard took off his rings and all the jewellery that he had, cast them over into the dark waters of Sydney Harbour, and swore off rock music forever and took up preaching. He became very much immersed in religion. Maybe it didn't have that effect on the people that saw it here, but it certainly had some effect in the West, but again, not the same effect as it had in the East, where it originated. In Russia, in Pravda, the Communist Party-sponsored newspaper, it got the regular two columns in the newspaper announcing the feat, whilst in the West, there was pages and pages and pages of analysis, implications, drawings, etc., etc. It certainly had a much greater effect on the West because it set the Americans thinking. If the Soviets are advanced enough with their technology to be able to put up one of these things in space, Lord knows what else they may be able to do. We'd better catch up with all of this. And so I think they changed their educational policy to introduce a lot more maths and science into the curriculum. And pretty soon there was a race on, the space race. It was part of the Cold War, and certainly the beginnings of this was back in the Second World War, another point of crisis, calamity, all over the planet just about. That's when the German scientists, trying desperately to find a weapon to win the war, went into rocketry that sent many a bomb towards the British Isles. Now, of course, with the Americans and the Russians both getting into Germany, they both made a very, very fast journey towards where these rockets were being created and took the scientists out of there, some to Russia and some to America. And of course, it leads me to a quirky little incident that was depicted well in a movie called The Right Stuff. Has anyone seen The Right Stuff? About the American space program. And there's a scene where Lyndon Baines Johnson is discussing the failures of the American rockets to get much off the ground, when in comes the report from a couple of other characters saying, the Russians have got one into space, they've got one into space. And Lyndon Johnson stands up, slams his forehead, and he goes, why is it that their German scientists are better than our German scientists? I think he also went on to say in the same movie something, and I'll paraphrase him here, that I refuse to let my grandchild sleep under the light of a Soviet artificial moon. So, good movie, have a look at it. But innovations and technology occur in times of need, and wars, whether they be the Second World War or the Cold War and the space race between the Americans and the Russians, it is the mother of invention in some instances. And even though it was not a particularly good time to be around for anyone on the planet, in fact, I think I might be able to quote from another movie here, The Third Man. I think anyone who knows that movie may know exactly the quote I'm making. And again, it refers to this necessity of invention during the times, unpleasant times of war and murder, because when he was finally cornered, Harry Lime, the character played by Orson Welles, quietly responded in justification of his terrible acts and the war. He said, well, look back at the Italian Renaissance. In that period of about 100 years, there was murder, there was war, there was torture, poisonings, everything that you can think of. However, that period also gave us Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Dante, and even Galileo shortly after. Now he went on to say that during the comparable period, the Swiss experienced 400 years of peace. And what did they give us? The cuckoo clock. So, strange times and cruel times can sometimes be the mother of invention. If I might be serious for a little while, though, and compare 1957 to now, had Sputnik gone up tonight, we wouldn't have been able to see it from Melbourne. We definitely would not have been able to see it from where we are, and probably not from some of the suburbs. And the reason for that is, back in 1957, we didn't have so many exterior lights pointing not downwards like these wonderful lights where we need to see where we're walking, or if you're running around the tan. And unfortunately, we've had... Can I be a little bit controversial here, Bruce? I've got his okay, so can I go for it, is he, to quote him? There's some new lighting that's gone up around Melbourne Observatory, which is still being used regularly to view the sky, sometimes in public tours, sometimes private individuals. Oh, the society members using the telescopes. But these lights have gone around the observatory up on poles that not only illuminate the ground for the runners or the walkers, but they also go sideways and also upwards into the sky, illuminating dust particles in the atmosphere and making it incredibly difficult to see the wonder of the night sky. This is our heritage, ladies and gentlemen. It belongs to all of us. Now, had some good lighting been used, it would have been a different story. Astronomers are not against lighting per se. However, we are for well-designed lighting, lighting that's fully shielded and illuminates the ground and doesn't go up into the atmosphere. If we do that, we can use smaller light wattage in our globes to power them, which means it'll cost less for one thing. We won't have to use as much coal burning to use it in the creation of the electricity. We won't be creating as many greenhouse gases that then filter up into the atmosphere. So it would be a win-win-win-win situation for everybody concerned if we can just get this spread of uncontrolled external lighting under control. It'll benefit not only astronomers, but our children and our children's children, because I bet there's none of you here that can remember seeing the Milky Way from Melbourne. I knew someone would catch me out. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Peter. Oh, but not from central Melbourne. No. From the suburbs, there's still a possibility from time to time. So this is something we should reclaim as part of our heritage. However, getting back to Sputnik, without Sputnik, it's arguable that we probably wouldn't have had the moon landing. Certainly we wouldn't have had it in the 60s. It would have occurred much later. And certainly everything else would then necessarily have gone much further back in the timetable as well. So without Sputnik, there'd be no moon landings in the 60s. Not until much later for perhaps the Hubble Space Telescope and all the discoveries and everything else that went with it. And also, of course, there wouldn't be any 50th anniversary blast off into space exhibition by Australia Post. And if for nothing else, we have Sputnik to thank for not being at home right now watching or enduring another session of So You Think You Can Dance. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy the exhibition, and I would like now to officially declare it open. Blast off 50 years into space.
Thank you, Harry.